Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? This is B&G Angels, new pod coming at you.
Hey.
This is Jay Stills. We got Julie. Hey.
Hello. How are you?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I am doing great after that Redskins win.
Hail right. The Redskins. And we got the other Jay on, the female.
Yay.
Jay. How you doing?
Yeah. Hey.
So how y'all feel about this victory on Sunday?
I feel like Jay Gruden issued a code red, and I really wasn't sure if he'd still be here at halftime. I thought maybe they'd, lock him out of the stadium, but they came through. The team came through, and I was very, very impressed. Very impressed by our guys and actually by the coaching staff. So,
any words?
I was impressed.
Brave?
I was impressed.
No, go ahead. You were saying?
I was impressed because we fought through injuries. We came back 24-0. So, that just shows the team has guts. And
yep.
We're not going to sit here and get pushed around at home, especially at home, where the home crowd is with us,
Right.
It feels horrible to lose at home. That's like the worst place to lose, especially to a team that's not really great or good.
Yeah, I was very impressed. And, at halftime I was on Twitter thinking, are we going to put Colt McCoy in? Who's our interim head coach? And I'm so glad that I'm not the GM, and that they kept Cousins in, let him get that confidence in himself, and Jay Gruden has bought himself some time. I honestly think so. So it's good to go into the bye week.
What are you guys long term thoughts on Jay? I mean, let's not touch the quarterbacks, but. What do you think of Jay himself?
I think he's...
Go ahead. I think he's like a people's coach. Like, I would think like he's kind of like an Andy Reid in the sense that he connects with the players.
Right. I think he's learning. It's hard for me to tell if long-term... I think he's learning. That's all I can say, honestly, because he really handled some situations last year poorly. I feel like this year he's overcompensated a little, whereas he was so hard on Robert last year. But I think he's learning, and I think the knee-jerk reaction would be just to get rid of him, like I was feeling yesterday at halftime. But I think we've got to give them all a chance to develop and sort of mesh as a unit. Because now we've got Callahan with the offensive line, and I just think it's important to at least go through the season with an open mind, and I guess Scott can evaluate at the end of the year, because that wasn't his coach. So what do you think? What do you think, Jason?
I go on the fence with Jay. I'm not quite sure. Like you said, last year – he wasn't very professional with the way he treated any player. I think he was really fast to throw his players under the bus, especially Robert. The way he even last week with Kirk, just the way when he used the wind as an excuse, that was bad. I think he still has to work on that. he's young himself as far as a coach, but we do have a owner that's not very patient as far as
you
letting
think?
People develop. Yeah, I mean, that's what I've heard.
Yeah.
So with that, and I know we said we wasn't going to touch on quarterbacks, but what do you guys think? I'll start with you, Jay. What do you think is the end game for RG3? Do you think they hold him and try more next year, or do you think it's enough?
I think it all depends on how well Kirk Cousins does, or how well the team does that's around Kirk Cousins. Because if you finish, let's say we go 3-13, we don't win any games for the rest of it. Why shouldn't RG3 still be here? But if we go 8-8, 9-7, we win the division, then why is RG3 still here? You know what I'm saying? So it just depends on the record, and if that $16 million, I read somewhere that $16 million isn't guaranteed unless he's injured. So, and then if we cut him next year, we won't have to worry about the salary cap either.
Yeah, this is how his option worked. His option had to be picked up, which, of course, they did. It was kind of a no-brainer. As long as he is on the bench right now and he does not get injured, that cap number means nothing for next year. The only way that $16 million comes in play is if he gets injured and cannot pass a physical this season. Then that money becomes guaranteed. If
okay,
not,
but here's
they can
my question.
Let him go.
Oh, go ahead. Here's my question.
No, I'm saying yes.
No, but if you ever intended on playing him, if you had any intention of playing him this year, why even sign that contract? Or why have him sign that contract? Because then he doesn't have really a fair opportunity to play.
You pick up that option, in my opinion, is because when they picked it up, it's before you had camps and training camps. And as far as, like, for someone like Scott, you would want to get a good eyeball on him, seeing him in practices, seeing him behind closed doors, talking with him, seeing him in some preseason so you can get your own judgment and not listen to what everyone else has said. Because, like, just like that, if he doesn't work out, he can sit bench. You can keep him inactive every week, and then you cut him or whatever you do, and you owe him nothing. But go ahead.
I almost feel like, let's say Cousins didn't have that comeback. Let's say we lost the game 24-0. Then I almost feel like by signing that option or having him sign that option, it makes him have to stay on the bench because it's too much of a risk to play him. So that makes Colt McCoy our other option. I almost feel like it's guaranteed to keep him on the bench. I don't know. I feel like other people on Twitter feel that way. I don't know what you guys think of that, but I almost feel like it's actually making it so he can't play.
I'll agree with you in that sense. I mean, I can't justify it, and I'm really interested to hear what you guys think about it. Is he throughout the whole offseason, you heard that, you know, in the camps and stuff that, you know, he stepped up and he's throwing a really nice ball and it was completed. But then, you know, if you sit there and you really read and if you guys research and go back, you'll see they say the defense reached home, but he gets off a laser pass. What does defense get home mean? It means the defense would have sacked him,
right?
But you can't touch the quarterback.
Right.
So
he
then he gets
shirt,
in
right?
game. Yeah, that yellow shirt, you know.
Yellow,
but then he gets
in
game. You get in game, and it's live action, and the other team can hit you. Well, I haven't seen Robert run like Robert was able to run since that Minnesota game. I have not seen that speed since his knee injury.
I miss that guy.
Maybe they
picked
the top.
But,
I think they picked up the option because maybe they were afraid that if they didn't, that after he's done this year, another team will pick him up like that easy. Or maybe they don't pick up the option. They don't play him, and they cut him to make room for someone else because we do need – I mean, we have a lot of injuries right now. We do need a roster spot for somebody mm-hmm. else. So maybe if they cut him right now, maybe Dallas might pick him up, or a team that needs a quarterback. The Bills might pick him up. They need a quarterback for the moment, you know?
Boy, do they.
Maybe they were
yesterday.
Afraid of
wow.
that.
Poor
maybe
DJ
they were afraid
Van
that
Van.
A rival might pick them up, and he actually plays well in their system. And, you know, we could play the Cowboys, but it's going to be RG3 versus, you know, his old team. Mm-hmm. Instead of Matt Castle or whoever is the quarterback whenever we play them, for them.
Right. Can you imagine the what it would be like in D.C. if he did go to the Cowboys or to the Eagles? I mean, I can't even imagine what that would be like here.
And I think, really, the Eagles have the perfect offense for RG3 right now. It's fast.
I disagree with you there, Jay. Yeah, and that's why I disagree with you right there. It's fast pace. It requires quick decisions. And
right.
what's his number one thing is his problem. He holds on to the ball too long. He still can't read a defense.
The Eagles' offense with LeSean McCoy, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Macklin, instead of this new Eagles' offense that's GM'd by Chip Kelly, the GM instead of the coach.
So RG3 would have been great with the Andy Reid Eagles.
Well, yeah.
I agree with that, yes. I think that Andy Reid might be able to get I think Daniel Snyder messed up by firing Shanahan way too early. I think the quarterback, you know, Robert was allowed to get to the owner too quickly
mm-hmm.
and then become a bond. And then his father complaining to the Washington Post, you know, them writing an article that he doesn't want to run anymore. And when he was drafted, Mike told Dan it's going to take 5 years to turn him into a pocket passer. Well, we all know the magic of 2012. Then he got his knee hurt again. Now he's forced to be a pocket passer, and he's not ready yet.
Right. I think 2012 was the worst thing that could have ever happened to him.
I agree. I think he should have been treated like some rookies get treated, sit and learn. Mm-hmm. Like Aaron Rodgers, he sat behind Favre, and now look at him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to say that as far as who I think the best technical quarterback in the league is, it's Aaron Rodgers. As far as who I think I'd want on my team, it'll be Tom Brady any day of the week. But that's just me. I tend to – because – He wins the playoff games. He wins the Super Bowls. But I know that's not what this podcast is about. But I do think that RG3, by having things catered to him so much and so much quick success, I actually think going to end up being his downfall, at least here in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
So let's say Kurt doesn't make it and they fall apart. Do you guys see, because honestly, I don't see a true number one overall quarterback in this draft. I know everybody was on the kid from Cal, but he played a top team, and I think he got intercepted like 4 times that game. You know, he made some plays, but he didn't look great. I think Cook is the other one everybody was high on. And he's from Michigan State, just like, you know, Kirk is. What do you see? There's not a lot of veteran, even free agency. You know, you have Bradford that'll be a free agent, Fitzgerald, these type of guys. What would you guys think of doing?
Okay.
I think the reason why they're playing Kirk Cousins right now to see if maybe they do have a quarterback on the team, which is right now their best option or what they think is their best option is Kirk Cousins, so then you won't be 7, 8, 9 players away. You'll only be, you know, less of a quarterback away, you know. So maybe if Kirk Cousins does well, you know, maybe they might play him next season and see where they can get next season's draft is good.
I agree.
So instead of this draft, wait until next draft to see if there's a quarterback there.
All right.
I agree.
We got a special guest on with us. We want to welcome in Mr. Robert Henson, you know, former Redskin linebacker here. Maybe he can shed some his thoughts on some of this stuff with the Redskins. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Oh, man. Good game on Sunday, right?
I know, right? Hey, ladies, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm blessed. So
hey,
I was
Robert.
Listening to you. Hey, I was listening to you guys, and it seemed like y'all were right on point with everything that y'all were saying. So I don't know what else I can add, but try me.
So, I mean, what's I'll start out with, you know, let the girls have at you here. What is your thoughts with Robert? What do you think is going on or should happen?
I spoke to Robert maybe like 3 weeks ago. DY had a little get together at his house, and you know, some of the players came through, and you know, I spoke to Rob. He was in good spirits. He looked like he was in good health, man. He was just enjoying the people and the event. So. After talking a little football with him, I mean, it just sounds like he just wants what's best for the team, you know, and I feel like he and, you know, our relationship is such that he wouldn't just give me the political answer. And knowing him personally, I just feel like that's exactly what he wants. If Kirk is best for the team to run this offense, then he was all on board for that. I think the best thing to see on Sunday was, you know, Kirk threw the game-winning touchdown, and, you know, RG was in the crowd of guys, you know, congratulating him. You know, he wasn't sitting off all sour and looking at him funny at some of the mimes and the memes and, you know, pictures. So, but he's in great spirits, man. I'm excited to see, what the next chapter in his life brings. I figure it'll be with another team, to be honest.
I agree, and he's a good guy, and he deserves the best, and I hope that for him.
So,
Go ahead.
So, you said you think it's best for him to move on from the Redskins. What team do you think fits his skill set right now?
I get this question all the time, and, you know, just from, you know, people talking to me or, you know, random people or whatever. I hate to say it, man, but I feel like Philly is just like waiting for him in the wings. I think
really?
Chip is just waiting. I really do because
I think
I know Jay agrees
Philly,
with you.
Yeah, Philly's just waiting in the wings to see what we do with him. They don't want to trade for him. You know, nobody wants to be on the hook for that $16 million next year. But you know, they, you know, a lot of teams probably think he's a great guy to come in and give a shot to. And I really think Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta, and maybe not, you know, out, you know, uprooting Matt Ryan, but just as a backup, and you know, if anything does happen to Matt Ryan, then, you know, RG could, you know, step in. But Philly's just there because all his skill sets fit Philly, what Philly wants to do. They want to run the ball, and they want to use him. They would like to use a quarterback to run the ball, and everything is off the drift. And the drift is basically the quick play action with the quick pass, you know. So I think it fits his skill set tremendously.
Well, I wish him the best, but I prefer it not be in shape.
I know.
Yeah.
<right.
laughs> It's like for Robert, the man, I want what's best for him, but as a fan, I don't know if I can stomach that. So, yeah.
Well, I just look at everything that he's – everything that he's done that where he was successful. He was successful in the read option. That's a part of Atlanta's game. It's heavy what Philly does. And just that 1-2 read, and if it's not there, go. For a long time, I felt like Robert got caught up listening to outsiders. If he ran the ball too much, whether we won or lost, people would say he got to run. He got to learn. I mean, he got to stay in the pocket. He got to learn how to slide. Running quarterbacks don't win Super Bowls, all that stuff. So I think he tried to modify his game to fit what people were saying, and instead of just being true to what he does and being the gifted athlete that he is.
Yeah. I mean, do you think with the issues with his knee and some of maybe the do you think he's better at reading a defense now, and could he process quickly enough to go into an offense that moves quickly
the
way Chip Kelly's does?
I think he could process it quickly. With Chip's offense, you see it. It's, you know, you identify a coverage. If a defense is switching that coverage, you know, mid-snap, then I think that's where his legs will come into play. And if the first read isn't there, second read isn't there, you know, he'd be able to go. As far as quarterbacks reading defense, I mean, there are a lot of quarterbacks you watch that really can't. I'm not going to say can't, but have trouble reading defenses. We saw it a long time here when I was there with Jason Campbell. He was a 1-2 read type of guy. If he wasn't there, then he most likely was taking a sack, or he was throwing an interception, or, you know. And when the offense is simplified, I think it allows the athlete to play a lot faster. And we saw that happen when Kyle was here with RG.
Well, I do have a question that sort of relates to this.
Okay.
I was looking back at an interview you did in 2011, and you were college teammates with Andy Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
And you said he's a winner and a cerebral assassin. And, you know, everyone thought that Jay Gruden brought out the best in him, that, you know, that's the reason I think he got the head coaching job with us. But I feel like Andy Dalton has actually done better under Hugh Jackson.
So I would agree.
How much credit do you give Jay Gruden for Andy Dalton's development, and how do you feel about the way he's developing the players here, not just quarterback, but all positions?
Well, my relationship with Andy goes back, obviously, to college. He was my quarterback for 2 years, my junior and senior year at TCU, and you could just see the progression from year to year. He's one of those guys with, I call, like, the Jordan attitude, the it factor, as far as he's like a gunslinger, a Brett Favre type. He wants to fit the ball in. He locks on the receiver. He wants the big play. He wants to step on the defense as many times as he can, which hurts him sometimes, but it's paying off for him this year. I think Jay deserves some of the credit. If I had to put it in a percentage, I would say 40%. Because coaching has a lot to do with it. Coaches put you in position to be successful. They know what type of player you are. They know your strengths. They know your weaknesses by the time they draft you. And they know in order for you to be successful, they have to come up with a good game plan. So I would give Gruden 40% of that. As far as him getting the job and coming here, I do think that was a big part of you know, his interview process, is saying, look at what I did with Andy in Cincinnati. And he promised to do that with Rob. That's no secret. Everybody knows it. And we've yet to see it. I do think he likes the West Coast type of quarterbacks that can, you know, boot out and get the ball out of their hands quickly, which I think obviously Rob doesn't fit, because Rob is one of those big play guys. Just from watching him, RG is one of those guys that if he wants the big play, he wants to make the awesome play, the spectacular play, which is great. But sometimes you just got to live with the check down, and I don't think he fully came to grips with that in this offense.
Yep.
Okay, I got a question for you in terms of why we brought Jay Gruden here. At first, I was reading this article that said that when Jay Gruden was in Cincy, the general manager wanted to draft Colin Kaepernick, but Jay Gruden wanted Andy Dalton. So my question is, if he didn't want to draft Colin Kaepernick, why didn't we as Redskins, or the Redskins, whoever made the decision to hire him, which is the GM, think that he could develop RG3?
Well, I think that was a big selling point in his interview. Like I said before, that he really, you know, with his time in Cincy, he came across as a quarterback guru type, or, you know, a guy that can develop quarterbacks. Whether that was really him or not, that was a perception around the league, is that, you know, look at what Jay's doing for Andy. So I think that was a big selling point for Dan. And we all know Dan can miss the small things sometimes, a lot of the times, actually, in some of his hires, some of his free agent pickups, and, you know, some of the players that he fall in love with, he can miss the small things, the small intangibles. So I just think that's one of the things that he missed. I feel like, personally, they're going to end up cycling through all three quarterbacks again. That's just me. I hope Kirk pans out. I want him to. I still don't feel like he's the long-term answer here in D.C., and you know we have a short leash for quarterbacks here.
Do you think RG plays this year, even with the option?
Yes. I do.
Do you think we take that risk?
I do. Yeah, I don't think they take that risk. I think they're forced into that risk.
Gotcha.
I like Colt. He's quick on his feet sometimes. He's not a franchise guy, but I do think he's an okay game manager. And to be honest, if Kirk didn't do anything on that drive that they scored, I would have looked to see, you know, I would have thought Colt would have come in the game, to be honest, because the offense was sputtering. Running game was half dead. So, and you know, Kirk wasn't making the plays. But also, Colt isn't the most durable quarterback. So that's why I would think that they would, you know, after benching Kirk, if they would have, and, you know, Colt playing a little bit, I wouldn't have wanted him to get hurt, but, you know, his track record said he does. So, you know, they go right back to RG, just like they did last year.
Yep. Yep.
Speaking of the running game, there's a lot of people that think that the offense should revolve around one back. Some people think that since Alfred Morris is like, he gets stronger as the game goes on, should he be the back that gets most of the carries, or should it be Matt Jones, who you drafted in the third round, to see what he has?
The funny thing is that it's crazy because people keep, you know, pinning, you know, Alfred against Matt Jones, Alfred versus Matt, this whole charade. And in all reality, we've seen in the past where two-back systems have had a lot of success in A, keeping guys healthy the whole season, and B, they just kind of feed off each other. Because, I mean, I remember this past Sunday, or yesterday, that, you know, Matt Jones breaks a run, and then Al comes in, and he breaks one right behind him. So I think they really feed off each other. I think the only negative stuff is coming from outside of that locker room. Obviously, there is a power play contract-wise, in my opinion. And just from being on the inside, I know that's how they think. They don't want to pay guys, really, especially running backs approaching their mid, you know, to late 20s. So Alfred does deserve majority of the carries, in my opinion. I just think towards the beginning of the year, we're running more of a power game, which suits Sheriff well, which suits Morgan Moses especially well.
Mm-hmm.
More of a downhill type as opposed to the zone one cut, because we've seen how the one cut, the zone running game has, you know, been okay and not really effective this season. So to answer your question, I think they both, they feed off each other. If Alfred goes down and, you know, Max has to carry most of the load, he'll be your power back, obviously. And Chris Thompson adds an amazing wow factor, third down back, you know, to this whole dynamic of the offense. I think they all three feed off each other.
I mean, do you think that – I mean, I feel like our pass protection has gotten so much better, but our run blocking, do you think some of the issue has anything to do with the some of the injuries on the offensive line at the center position?
I would agree. I don't think Larivas is a center. That's just my opinion. I mean, you stick the guy there.
I don't think he's a line.
The team. Yeah. I don't think he's a center. He's just a guard, or, you know. But I think a lot of that has to do with play calling. If you run a play action and you hadn't established a run, it's pointless. So, in my opinion, it's pointless. So I think a lot of that has to do with the play calling, running the ball. We've become very predictable on first down. everybody knows it's probably going to be a zone run. And it's just funny watching it on TV with a couple of my friends, and I hear Kirk stand up and say, can. That obviously means he's running the ball the other way. Can the first play and go with the second play. So, I mean, as a defense, you know that. So I just think, you know, you got to put guys in positions to be successful. We can't become predictable. Let's change our audible calls. You know, I mean, everybody around the league knows that if you play defense, you hear can, you know, the first play is dead. They're going to run the second play, which is most likely the opposite way.
I mean, do you think that, is that on Jay Gruden or is that on the offensive coordinator? Do you think he's in over his head?
I don't think the offensive coordinator is over his head. Gruden and McVay have a good track record of play calling in certain situations, not all situations. I'm not a big fan of spreading everybody out on 3rd and 1. No, like that's it's crazy. To be honest, I think when the smartest play they made was when they handed the ball to D.Y. on the 3rd and 1.
I love that guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's I'm a little biased in this situation. He's like my brother, so but I think he should get more involved. He's a great pass catcher out of the backfield, and when he's back there, you have a 1-2 punch in that sense. You don't know if Al's getting the ball or Matt Jones getting the ball or D.Y.'s getting the ball, and you're able to set up that play action with D.Y. in the flat as a check down, which I think he's been very consistent in his play on that. So it's just, like I said, it's just play calling. We're getting very predictable, and we gotta kind of change that up.
Yep, I agree. I don't think that that Jay Gruden had a fullback in Cincy, correct?
Actually, when Jay came in, you know, D.Y. came home one day and he was like, I don't really know how I'm going to fit in this offense because Jay didn't use a fullback really in Cincy. So, okay. And we're kind of seeing it now. His first year, he played a lot more. And he's been frustrated by that, you know. But obviously, like I said, in the 3rd and 1, when they went to him, it was a big morale boost for him, which obviously made him play, you know, a lot harder and more enthusiastic, like he always does. So, I don't think Jay has real good track record of using a fullback, but I think he'd be smart to use a fullback in this situation. D.Y. is a matchup problem, to be honest.
Yeah.
I remember personally guarding him in practice, and he would come out of the backfield and run a wheel route, and it was almost always 6. Or you holding him, or you trying to push him down or something. I mean, he's fast. He's a legit 4-5 guy, so, and that's rare at a fullback position.
Well, I know the fans want to see more of D.Y., so hopefully Jay Gruden will figure out how to use him properly.
Yeah, I'm more anxious to see what our defense does. I think the inconsistency at linebacker, I'm not just saying this as a linebacker, former linebacker. I say this because on defense, that's a position that I watch primarily the most, obviously.
Thank you.
Will Compton coming in on key third down situations. Keenan Robinson going out with an injury. To be honest, I think Perry's outplayed all of them this year. That's just me. I may be by myself on that, but I think Perry showed more hustle. Obviously, he's still a liability in pass coverage. That'll never change. We knew that when we re-signed him to a 4-year deal. So you're seeing a lot more Will Compton on those key passing downs, which is cool, but it changes the defensive mindset because the linebackers are key to everything on defense, communication, you know, and just trust, knowing where a guy's going to be.
Is it fair to say that with the new defensive coordinator, with his one gap that is exposing maybe some of the linebackers' weaknesses? You know, these running backs are catching our edge pretty
you know
quick.
What, to be honest, on the big plays that were runs, the big runs, what I saw was every time Trenton came down in the box, he was either too far in his gap, or he wasn't quite in there. And with Will Compton, I think it was just a size issue where he's just almost engulfed by offensive linemen sometimes, which works out to his advantage sometimes because he's quicker. He's able to make some plays. But when it's just downhill run game, he struggles. And I honestly think Keenan overthinks things sometimes. I think he's by far like our best linebacker. But I think he overthinks things sometimes. He can get caught guessing which gap is going in. With a 3-4, the defensive linemen don't really have a gap, to be honest. And they can just they can kind of freelance, and you got to read as you go. So if, you know, if Terrence Knighton, if the ball's going left and Terrence Knighton decides to go right, you got to see that and get over the top. And that can be difficult to some extent. I would put most of the blame on the players from that perspective. The play calling that I've seen from Joe has been pretty good. I don't like playing off coverage when it's 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 3. I don't like that. I would like to see a little bit more press. But I think that comes with familiarity with the players. You know, you got a Jaquan Jarrett or you got Jarrett in there, and instead of a D-Hall, then I'm going to be a little bit more cautious in my play calling.
Speaking of Jarrett, he's playing really good for a 6th-round pick, playing nickel. He usually doesn't play. I don't think he raised his hand to play nickel. So how do you feel like he's going to be as a safety? Do you think if D-Hall comes back, do you think, move him to safety, as a starting safety, get Trent Robinson out of there?
Oh, man, it's tough because I like some of the things that T-Rob does. I really think he has a nose for the ball on some plays. I think sometimes he gets lost on some plays also. So it's I think Jarrett's the guy that has to continue to learn the position. If I'm a coach and he's doing good at nickel and he's everything we need, when D-Hall comes back, I'm probably going to keep Jarrett at nickel just to give D-Hall something else to worry about, just to be safe. Because, you know, as a vet, he can handle more change, you know, more various coverages. To be honest, I'm kind of lost as to where Jerron Johnson is. I mean, he came in the offseason. He's supposed to be the savior. We see him on special teams. I mean, he did block a punt, which is great, but we paid you, bro. Like, where you at?
He's on the sideline.
That's my mentality. That's what I'm saying. Like, so that lets me know. I kind of blame Scott for that because I think he just fell in love with, you know, one of his guys when he was out there. You know, that was one of his guys that he drafted. And he decided to bring him in. But Scott's been on point with most of the guys he's brought in this year. I like the outside linebacker, Jeff Coat, to be honest. I don't think he's all that good as a pass rusher, but I think he's stout against the run on some occasions. I would like to see Preston Smith get a lot more snaps than he already has. Trent is one-dimensional as a pass rusher, in my opinion. But
you want to get him in your weight room or something, man?
Trent Murphy?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Trent just needs to reminds me of Arakpo. Like, a bull rush is not going to work all the time, man. Like, come on. Like, it's just – I think on the whole defense, Perry and Chris Baker outplayed everybody.
Oh, Chris Baker.
What about Breland?
Listen, Breland balled out, but I don't know what happened to him the second half of the game before. I don't know what happened.
Short field? I don't know.
Yeah, New York, come, you know, he's playing good against Brandon Marshall and all those guys. And then the second half, they come out, and everybody's just flat. And to be honest, when the defense does that. Yeah, when the defense does that, the first thing I think of is, are they dejected because the offense is turning the ball over or hadn't gotten anything going? Because I remember being on the sideline sometimes, and Jason Campbell throw a pick, and guys is just like, man, here we go again. Like, you're already in that mindset of this is how it's going to be the whole game. So you don't play inspired. You don't play, you know, up to your ability.
I'm glad you said that because that's exactly what I wanted to ask you. Against the Jets, they went into the half with the lead. How do you come out flat in the second half?
Well, two reasons. I think we got the ball the second half first, didn't we? If I'm not mistaken.
No, they came out on defense. We came out on defense first.
Well, yeah. Two reasons. The first reason, in my opinion, is that you can get overconfident. If I'm Breland and I come out and I got a pick already and I'm forced to fumble, I'm like, oh, they trash. They not doing nothing. I got this. And you can lose respect for your opponent just because of your own personal success. And I think that may have been the case. And let's be honest, Jay's just not a motivator, in my opinion. All the guys go in halftime, you go your separate ways, you with your individual coach, you break down what worked, what didn't work, what you're focused more on in the second half, the first 10 plays you're going to call on each side of the ball, and then you come back up to your coach. When you come back up to your coach, that's a, you know, head coach, that's a rallying point right there. That's saying, okay, let's finish these guys. Like, we got them where we want them. I'll give you a perfect example. Jim Zorn was not a rallying coach. We would come up at halftime and, you know, listen to him. He'd be like, gosh darn it, let's go play. I'm like, come on, man. Like, you know, give us something else to go on. Like, what are your plans to go forward? Like, how are we going to win this game? Point out some of the positives that we made or positive plays that we made so we can build on that in the second half. Don't just say, all right, let's go play. I mean, anybody could say that.
I wonder what Jay said this week during halftime to go from, what were we, 24-7 at the half?
Well, from having a little inside knowledge, it wasn't Jay.
It wasn't Jay.
It was Chris Baker. It was Chris Baker and Hatch who brought everybody up and said, look, this ain't how we effing play, and we better than this. And to be honest, those guys led the way. So you can see it on the field. Who came out more enthusiastic, who came out, you know, still ready to play.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate
speaking of Jim Zorn.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I
was going to ask, one of the questions I've been just wanting to ask you is, what was it like working with, in your first year, Jim Zorn, Vinny Serrato, and Daniel Snyder?
Oh, man. When I met Mr. Snyder, I didn't even know he was Daniel Snyder. I walked right past him. I'm shaking everybody up hand. I walked right past him, which was silly of me. But Dan was very open and honest about what he wanted, where he wanted to go with the team, what he thought I brought to the team, what he thought other players brought to the team. I've always respected that about him because people think he gets caught up in the money and all this other stuff. In some sense, he does. But I mean, if you had a $1 million team, millions of dollars, you would be into it as much as he is. So he's a great guy. Jim Zorn, I just think he was a great players coach from a standpoint of if something was going on at home. I mean, my daughter Mackenzie was born during training camp, and you know, after the Ravens game, he was like, "Rob, go, don't come back until she's here." You know, so from that perspective, it feels good as a player to know that you got a coach who understands life. And I think he was more of a teacher on the life side of it than he was a head coach. He was a better teacher than he was a head coach. I remember the first practice against the Giants, he told Clinton to get in because he needed to see a play that the Giants run on defense. And Clinton was like, "Nah, I'm good. I don't play against these guys plenty of times." And as a rookie, I'm like, are you serious? If he tells me to run through the wall right now, I'm there. So, you know, I don't think he garnered the respect of the veteran players. And, you know, most of the time as the veteran players go, the rest of the locker room follows. So as a result, Albert Haynesworth would come into meetings late and didn't care, or, you know, it was just stuff like that. And, yeah, I mean, it was stuff like that all the time. And when you see him, when you see Albert getting away with stuff, you see Fletch getting away with stuff, you see, you know, Clinton getting away with stuff, as a younger player, you just kind of like, all right, like, this is how it is. That's how it's going to be. We go into games, and guys really wouldn't care about winning. And that's not a knock on Clinton. That's not a knock on any of those guys. And they still like big brothers to me. But the motivation just wasn't there at that stage in their career playing for Jim Zorn. Vinny Serrato, I can't say anything bad about him because he drafted me. I will say that you got to watch your back around Vinny. That was a word in the locker room. Is he'll praise you up one day. He'll say, oh, my God, you're great. You know, I remember him coming up to me and saying, Rob, we got to play you this year. We got to play you. Rocky's a little banged up. HB went down with I think he tore his meniscus or something. So he's like, Rob, we got to play you. Next thing you know, they're four linebackers coming in on Tuesday to work out. And I'm like, what about me? I thought you wanted me to play. So he was just kind of sneaky in that regard. But he never showed any malice or anything towards any of the players or me. So you just kind of had to watch your back around him.
Good information. Thank you.
I'm telling you. I got a true and false for you. And then I got two questions for you then. All right. True or false, Josh Laribas should be in the Arena League or something. But you ain't even got a cover.
I don't know Josh like I know the rest, so you good with this one. I'm going to say true.
Yeah.
What? Okay.
Okay, my other one is everyone is talking about getting rid of Garcon or D-Jack in the offseason. Please tell me that you think Robert needs to go, not RG3. I'm talking about the receiver.
Oh, yeah, Andre Roberts got to go. Jameson Crowder is the new slot. He's Andre Roberts 5.0. It's a wrap. It's over.
And
what's funny is, I just want to add this. It's funny that you notice when Roberts is in the game, Kurt looks at him a lot. It's Jordan Reed and Roberts. And when it's a tough situation, it's always Pierre. So just look for that next time you watch him play. Like, it's always that. I just can't figure it out. I remember watching a game this past Sunday, and I'm like, okay, he's about to go to Roberts. And he threw it. Every time I said he's about to go to Roberts, he threw it to him. So, I don't know. It's so weird.
Do you think they practice in the second string together? Do you think that's possible?
I think that is possible. But when you're in a situation like that, I'm going with my big play guys. Pierre is clutch in certain situations. I think when you need a third down, it's either Jameson or Pierre. And he can't really build that chemistry with Jordan Reed like you really want him to, because Jordan's always hurt. I mean, let's be honest. Jordan's a little soft, and he can't really – for some reason, he just can't stay healthy, man. I don't know what it is. It's a shame because he is a true linebacker nightmare, safety nightmare. His route running skills are probably best on the team.
My last one for you is how you feel about Bruce Allen.
I don't like Bruce.
Do you think he's? I would say, does he need to?
I'm gonna be honest with you, because in 2011, when I was coming off the injury, Bruce did some shady stuff, man. Bruce like really did some shady stuff. Shanahan was telling me every day, like, just get healthy. We want you here. You are here. We want to see what you can do on defense this year. We think you can be a great special teams player for us. And that's just everything coming from Shanahan. Bruce came out, I think the first Saturday of fan day, I was cleared to practice. So the Friday, that previous Friday, yeah, I was out running and conditioning and stuff, just getting ready, because I knew they were going to activate me on Saturday. I'd be off the pup list. So Bruce is watching me run. And I guess Bruce thought I was healthy enough to, you know, be released. And after talking to Morocco Brown, Morocco was like, yeah, that was all Bruce's decision. And I'm not mad because he released me, because I was injured, you know, whatever. I'm mad that he tried to say I was healthy when he released me. So I really got baptized into the business side of the NFL, which I really hate. And he was the main foe. Like, everything that had to do with him, everything that had to do with the team had to do with, like, coming straight from him. And then when I moved back to Virginia in 2013, a lot of people don't know this, but I got back in shape because Morocco Brown approached me and Alex Santos approached me saying, look, you know, you might be opportunity for you to return. They just want to make sure you're in great shape and that you're healthy. So I worked my tail off for like 6 months. Morocco Brown and Alex Santos worked out at the place that I worked out, that I was working on training. So he would come in every day and see me run, see me do stuff with Eddie Mason, who used to play linebacker here. Eddie was like, yo, he's ready. So I go to training camp, and Bruce wanted to sit down and talk to me. Bruce walked right past me. Like,
wow.
Like, seriously, he had a meeting set up. We all three of us had a meeting set up. four, really all four of us, had a meeting set up, and Bruce would just walked right past me. So after that, I was like, you know what, like football, it's over, it's a wrap, whatever. So Bruce basically came out and told Morocco that they didn't want to re-sign me because I sued them. Well, you released me injured. That's, you can't do that. That's against the rules. So why wouldn't I go and try to get compensated, you know? So he told Santos in Morocco that he didn't want to re-sign me because I sued him. So I was like, you know what, Bruce is just shady, and that's just still my opinion of him. I don't like him personally.
Yeah,
maybe it was a business decision. Maybe it's just the business. A lot of players don't like him, though. So I don't know.
But he is.
It's a lot of coaches too.
Oh yeah, I believe that's the reason Morocco left, because Morocco was trying to bring in the players. He would ask Morocco what players. Oh my God, y'all getting all kind of information out of me. but Morocco, I have no ties to the team, so I don't care. But anyway, Morocco was bringing in players that he thought could help the team win, and Bruce was saying, look, you kind of overstepping your boundaries. Like, I'm not asking you to do this. Well, that's part of Morocco's job description as assistant G. Like, come on. That's his job description, to bring guys to you and say, look, this guy can help us win. And Bruce was turning them down. So he just felt like he couldn't grow in that position. So they promoted Alex Santos, and Morocco moved on. I know. I threw a lot at you.
I was told that it reaches even to Jeff Fisher with the Robert Griffin. You know, that whole trade, that it was more Shanny's ties to Fisher, because Fisher didn't or doesn't like Bruce Allen. And a lot of people actually thinks he's a joke.
In my opinion, I think he's living off of his father's name. And let's be honest, the NFL is a good old boys league. So if you ain't got ties to somebody, if you don't know somebody who knows somebody, you're basically, you don't exist. And I think he's basically just living off of his father's name. I mean, I think his father is a great man. Is a great man. And he did some great things. So everybody's saying, well, the apple can't fall too far from the tree. Well, in fact, it rolled all the way down the hill. So I'm just giving you my personal experiences, and, you know, you form your opinion as you wish. But a lot of players, a lot of agents, a lot of coaches don't like him. A lot of front office people didn't like him. I mean, he was threatening to fire Miss BJ, which has been the team receptionist forever. She's seen maybe 12 coaches come and go. Like, she's a receptionist. Like, what are you doing? She's like 80 something, bro. Like, let that woman live. And she's great.
Terrible.
She's great at her job. Like, and you trying to let them go. It's all kind of stuff now. So when you see trouble on the field, and just from personal experience, I already know that it's in the front office more than it is on the field. If people knew exactly what happens in the front office all the time, and what they really think of players and what they say about players, you'd be horrified. You really would.
Wow.
I mean, D.Y. was one touchdown away from his bonus last year, and then he stopped getting the ball on fourth downs or on goal line situations. So it's just it's stuff like that. So when Alfred is getting less carries, I'm not surprised.
Do you think this goes on with other teams, or is this like a Redskins?
The Redskins don't cover their tracks as well as other teams. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
They don't cover their tracks as well as other teams. I'm not trying to bag on the team. I really like this team. I really like the players in the locker room. I really believe in some of the coaches, and they have, you know, a heart for the game, a heart for the team, and they really want to win and doing everything they can to win. I do think our training staff is a joke. That's just personal experience, and it's you've seen it with other players, not just me. It's just a bunch of stuff. Robert gets cleared by independent, you know, he don't get cleared. The guy resigns. It's just when stuff like that happens, it does affect the players on the field. I'll tell you that much. Mm. Don't worry. Y'all can read all this in the book I'm working on.
You working on a book?
Get the copy. So you said our training team is dope. Like, does that explain why we have so many injuries? Like, we're the second-ranked team in terms of injuries?
I don't understand how. So when I first got hurt, 2010, the original diagnosis on the sideline without an MRI was a sprained knee. I said, okay, I trust you guys, sprained knee, whatever. That morning, when we got back, as soon as I got off the plane, I had to go to get an MRI. Went and got an MRI. I had a torn meniscus and a torn MCL. I have surgery. I'm out for the rest of the year. I have surgery. A month later, they got me running sprints with Ray, the former weight strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah.
They got me running sprints a month off of surgery.
Mm.
Who does that? That is ridiculous. Nobody does that. Mm. It was so bad that I went home. I went back to TCU and I rehabbed and I did everything I had to do there. And nobody called me, nobody checked on me. They would call like every 3 months or so and Larry Hess would say, "Oh, how's Robert doing?" Talking to the TCU training staff. And they was like, "Oh, he's progressing, he's doing great." That's all. And when they came to play Dallas that year, in Arlington, I went to the team hotel. And I was chilling, hanging out with the guys and stuff. That was the only time people seen me. That was it. And I knew from the jump that it was they really didn't know what they were doing. And I mean, some great guys in there. I think they really want guys to get healthy, but just the practices and the way they do things is just kind of backwards. So when guys go get surgery at other places, other doctors. Like, I went to Dr. Andrews, who did my second surgery, because I tore it again the first time. So a lot of people really don't know that. Like, I tore my MCL again, coming back training with the team in the off season. So I had Dr. Andrews do it the second time. Second time, it felt great. I was ready. I had to get back in shape. So, you know, I don't want to bag on our training staff a lot, but I just really want people to know that they don't. They're so fearful of their job that they'll rush players. I'll say that. So when you see a guy like D-Jack, he's about the only guy who can. If you make a lot of money, you don't have to. You don't have to be rushed back. You come back when you feel ready.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a young guy, you're fighting for a position,
mm-hmm.
or you know you're on the bubble, so to say, you will play hurt most likely. HB played hurt a lot. People wonder why he retired after 4 years. HB was hurt all the time.
Man.
Well, I know when other players have left, I mean, not that I'd rather not say my opinion on LeRon Landry, but I know that he's one player when he left, he really bagged on the team and the training staff. And there have been other players who've left and said the same thing.
You know, when they say that stuff, you're just kind of like, you just mad because you got released. Until
right.
you thrown in a situation and you running with and my stitches are busting open, bleeding.
Oh, God. Because
they want me to run hundreds.
Wow.
That makes
sense.
Gosh. It's retarded. It's crazy.
Wow.
So, this team, I think this team is going in the right direction. Scott was a great hire. I really, really am excited to have a GM who has a plan, who can see beyond one season. Beyond six games, and I really feel like they're headed in the right direction just from that hire alone. I think Bruce needs to go. I think he's just taking.
So we can win on
the
field instead of off it.
Yeah, I do think we can. Like I said, I don't think the quarterback of the future is on the roster yet. So I'm really anxious to see who he drafts, who he brings in at the quarterback position, how he continues to build the offensive line. And the secondary, I think those are the three key positions that we really, really, really need. I think Deshaun Golson is great. He makes mistakes. Who doesn't? But I think he's been consistent. to a certain extent and been the leadership that the young guys look to in the secondary. But again, he's just a 1 year, 2 year guy, maybe. I was excited to see what Junior Gillette could do. I think that was a great pickup. I was a little sad that we didn't go after Alden Smith. I know he's got a history and he's, you know, he does all kind of crazy stuff, but you know, give a guy a shot.
Speaking of like the quarterbacks and stuff, I think it'd be great. We have CSN Tarek.
Yeah, Tarek Albuquerque.
He's here with us. Yeah, he's on the line with us. I think. Tarek, you there? Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Man, do you see a first-round talent in this draft?
No.
Like the top guy?
nobody set themselves apart. I do think there are a lot of guys in the second and third round who could be pretty good NFL quarterbacks, but there's nobody that just sticks out, in my opinion. Maybe I'm a little biased, but, you know, Trevon Boykin, he doesn't have the traditional height that you look for in a quarterback, but I do think he's got the intangibles. The reason I don't think people would be excited about him being drafted here as a quarterback is we're fresh off of Robert Griffin. And anybody who can run the ball like that and and make plays with their feet, we just kind of like hope this ain't another RG3 situation. But Trevon Boykin's doing a great job. He's a Heisman front runner. I did like Hackenberg from Penn State. I think that's his name, if I'm not mistaken. But
Hackenberg, yeah, that's
inconsistent.
My boy.
Yeah, yep. But he's been inconsistent, to say the least. And then there was the Kessler kid out of USC. We all know how USC quarterbacks fare. So it's just nobody this year. Nobody this year. That's why I think Kurt has his job this year and next.
All right, I think we have Tarek on the line now. I gave a good intro, but apparently he was not there. Hello.
Hello, I'm here, guys.
Hello.
All right.
Hi.
I got cut off a couple times there, sorry.
Hey, we were just talking to Robert Henson about, like, the quarterbacks and Alf and that kind of stuff. I was wondering your take on the QB position as it is, as far as, like, someone like Robert getting back on the field this year.
Yeah, I think that's a long shot at this point. I think the Redskins front office and the Redskins coaching staff has decided they want to go ahead with Kirk Cousins. If there was any opportunity there for a change of quarterback, I think that disappeared after what we saw yesterday against the Buccaneers. I think that kind of underscored Gruden's belief that Kirk Cousins has something there worth developing. I asked him about it in the news conference today. I said, do you feel like Kirk's performance on Sunday validated your belief in him? And he basically said, yeah. You know, he showed us exactly what we wanted to see. Now what we want to see is consistency. We don't want to see those peaks and valleys, and we don't want to see, you know, a good game followed by a poor game, followed by an adequate game, followed by a bad game. We need to, you know, to see what other quality starting quarterbacks do in the NFL, which is, consistency. He's consistently playing at a high level. He hasn't been able to do that yet in 16 starts. In fact, he hasn't even won back-to-back starts in his three-plus seasons in the NFL, and that's thorough thing to see now, and for him to string together some strong performances.
In your guys' opinion...
Do you think, considering the reduced production from Morris, do you think Alfred Morris will be back next year?
I think, you know, we're going to find out here over these final, nine games, what Morris' future is. But, I mean, just look at his numbers from the past three games. There's a clear drop-off. I've gone back and I've watched the past two games really closely, and there's a lot going on there. I mean, there's been a revolving door at offensive line. I mean, obviously, Trent Williams is out for a game. Sean LaValle has been out for a number of games. Corey Lichtensteiger has been out. So I think there's been some inconsistency in the blocking game, but I think there have been a lot of opportunities missed by the running back, by not just Morris, but also by Jones. I mean, the numbers are just horrid right now. And, you know, being that he's a free agent, you know, I would say at this point, he's not making an argument for a new contract for the Redskins right now. I'm talking about Morris here.
Right.
I'm going to jump you back to quarterback here real quick because just because of, like, what you said with Kirk, is Kirk really a Jay Gruden guy? Is it really his guy? Because last year, I'm asking this because last year Robert was the starter, dislocated his ankle. They went with Kirk. Kirk did okay and then really started to throw the interceptions, and he turned to McCoy. McCoy played decently, got hurt, and he went back to Robert and not Kirk. Like, he buried Kirk then.
That is a great point. I mean, after Kirk blew his one opportunity, you know, and he got benched there at halftime in that Tennessee game, we didn't see him for the rest of the season. I think that tells you right there that there was some trepidation on Gruden's part as to whether Cousins had a future with the Redskins and, you know, had what it takes to become a starter. I think things are always changing in the NFL, you know, from week to week, from game to game. And I think that things took a sharp turn in this past offseason. I think that Gruden's hand was forced to a certain extent as far as naming Griffin the starter back in February. And, I think that everyone was hoping to see the progress that was required from Griffin. And, you know, when you want something to happen so bad, sometimes you overlook and you aren't quite seeing the reality of what's going on. And then I believe it was the Lions preseason game when he got hurt. I think that was the turning point. I mean, before he suffered the concussion, the ball just wasn't moving down the field. I mean, nothing was working. He was getting sacked. He was missing open receivers. I think at that point, Gruden realized, you know, his own job was on the line and he had to make a change to move the team forward. And, you know, he installed Kirk, who just a few months before that wasn't his guy, right? So, you know, I think it was an interesting confluence of events. I don't think that, you know, he set out this season at all with the plan that Kirk Cousins will be a starter, you know, going into week 8. But that's how it played out.
To be honest, I would agree with you, Tariq. But I do think Rob was sabotaged. I think Rob was sabotaged. The different play calling when you know Rob is in the game versus, you know, when Kirk's in the game, and they're two different type of quarterbacks. So I do realize that and I see that. But you know, it's just a Russell Wilson type of game would have definitely fit RG. You know, with a lot of boots, and it would have definitely helped the running game out. I don't particularly think it should have stayed with the read option type just to make him successful. But the quick reads, the boots, the threat, and the option of him running were his strengths. And that's an easy playbook to put together, in my opinion. So when you come out and you're telling him to drop back, sit in the pocket, go through read 1 through 4, when you know that's not his game, is really setting him up for failure.
Robert, you're making some great points there. And I'll tell you, that's one thing that's been debated amongst the guys who cover this team on a day-to-day basis. It's been debated among people around the league. The one thing we haven't been able to quite figure out is how much of that was Robert saying he didn't want to run the read option. He didn't want to do that anymore. He wanted to be developed as a pocket passer. How much of that was pressure from his father? How much of that was pressure from him? Realizing that if he wanted a long-term career in this league, he wasn't going to be able to sustain all those things, and that he was going to have to convert into a pocket passer. And then they said, okay, fine. Well, we'll help you become that player, and then he wasn't able to make that transition, and that's where they ended up in this mess. And that's what we haven't quite ever gotten a straight answer from any of the principals involved, is how much of that was Gruden changing, you know, moving the goalpost, so to speak, and how much of that was Robert asking for the goalpost to be moved, and it just didn't work. What do you think about that?
Yep. I think that's a very valid point. But just from the standpoint of people saying if he runs, he's going to get injured. He wants to be in the pocket or be a pocket quarterback. And too, to the point that no NFL quarterback has that say-so unless you have rings in your net, unless you're a Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. Nobody really has that say-so of what type of offense they want to run. And they want to run, and I don't think Robert had that say-so. I do think his father probably whispers in his ear a lot more than he should.
Dennis,
go ahead.
Didn't his father go, I believe it was to the Washington Post, and said that he's taking too many hits, they need to change it up, he needs to be more of a drop back?
Yeah. Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
He was
sitting in the
actually,
pocket. He was sitting in the pocket.
It was an article written by the FBI shortly after the knee surgery.
And my other question is, and Robert, I mean, you could answer this one, like, because you've had the knee issue. He's torn his knee up a couple of times now. The threat of him running the read, does he have – I haven't seen that turbo button from him that he had versus Minnesota, like that Minnesota run. I have not seen that speed of him since that injury.
That's confident.
I know when I injured
my knee, and the first time I was able to get back out and kind of, you know, run through drills and stuff, that was the first thing on my mind is, okay, if I step like this, or if I was around a pile of guys, I was protecting my knee. I put my knee, you know, behind me, so to say. But so that I think I do think that's a confidence issue, and that would, to you know, like Tariq said, that would, you know, make a player more inclined to say, look, I want to play this type of style. I just have a hard time believing that any quarterback in the NFL has that type of influence, especially at Rob's. Stat, you know, at that time in his career.
Even with his relationship with Daniel Snyder, though?
His relationship with Daniel Snyder is beyond football. They rarely talk about what's on the field. And from what I've experienced and from what I've heard, they rarely talk about anything on the field. Stephen Bowen's event in D.C. like a year ago, where, you know, the whole team went to the bowling alley. Just from seeing those guys interact and the way they talk to each other, it really is more of a friendship than it is, look, this is what you're going to do for me on Sunday, or this is the type of plays that I need you to make, or this is the offense we think about running.
Well, I want to jump to Tariq on that one because I do agree with you on that point, and it's a rumor that I had heard before during training camp when Dan had left the state. I forget where he went, but he went on vacation. did you hear that he had basically signed off with Scott that they could do what they needed to do with Robert as far as, like, if they wanted to trade him or anything like that?
Well, I didn't hear it in that many words, saying QC signed off on it, but I do know that when Scott was hired, there were many conversations between he and Snyder at, okay, if I do this, if I move across the country to run your football team, I'm running your football team. I'm not going to be double-checking every single move that I make and, with yourself for downs. I'm going to have final say-so over the roster. And that was assured to him when he took this job. So wouldn't surprise me one bit.
What do you think of Scott's first draft? I mean, what players do you think will be with us long term? I'm not talking about next year. I'm talking about like a Trent Williams type player where you think they're going to be around for a long time.
Yeah. I think he did a pretty nice job in his first draft. You know, I was a little skeptical of the Brandon Scherff move. I was even more skeptical when he got moved from right tackle to right guard there in training camp, but he's turned out to be a pretty reliable player so far. I think that, you know, 10 years from now, if Scherff makes 3 Pro Bowls and is a starter for every single game, I don't think anyone's going to care that he was drafted number 5 overall, which is a high pick for a guard. Now, the one thing you're going to be wondering about is going to be in the back of everyone's head is, what is Leonard Williams doing? Does Leonard Williams become the first team All-Pro? You know, racking up 12, 15 sacks and you know, having himself a career in New York, I think you're going to, you know, they're always going to be linked.
Right.
People are always going to compare the type of career trajectory that Sheriff has and versus Leonard Williams. But I think Sheriff is a cornerstone type player. I think he's going to be around long term. I think Jameson Crowder was quite a find. You know, it's fun watching him and Chris Thompson on the field now. It's been so long. I've watched the team since I was 5 years old. It's been so long since they've had, you know, a couple of young, small, electrifying players who, you know, just kind of jitterbug types that can, you know, make something out of nothing. And Crowder is certainly that type of player. You know, getting him in the fourth round, I think was a bit of a steal. The question really is, you know, can he become a reliable punt returner as well? I think Preston Smith has a good chance to be a solid player for a long time. You know, they've been bringing him along slowly. I want to say he played the most snaps of his career last on Sunday against the Buccaneers. He played 38 snaps. A lot of that was because Ryan Kerrigan went out with a hand injury, but he's a game changer, man. He's forced a couple of fumbles. He's still getting acclimated to the speed and tempo of the NFL, but I like his burst. I like his length. I like his size. You know, he's still learning also how to work like an NFL player in practice, but I think he's going to be a pretty good player as well. Matt Jones, you know, I want to see more from him, but, you know, early on the season, I was very encouraged from what I saw from him. Kyshawn Jarrett, another player, I think, was a bit of a steal all the way down, the fifth or sixth round. You know, he's played a lot for a guy taken that low. How many of that? That's five players drafted this year that are contributing in a meaningful way to the Redskins. I think most general managers would be envious of that.
Well, it's nice to be on the right side of things for once, be able to say that, because I feel like it's been a really long time since we've been able to do that.
Yeah. No, I mean, to just go back to the 2013 draft. I mean, how big of a debacle was that? I mean, all they have left is Chris Thompson and Jordan Reed. Everyone else is either on another team or not in the league. You know, you can't – that's not sustainable. You can't build a franchise or sustain a franchise if you're keeping two players from a draft of six.
Right.
Hey, Robert Henson, he's got to walk off on us here. He's got to go. Hey, we appreciate you showing up, man.
Sure, no problem, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, I was talking about Rob. Maybe Robert already left here.
Oh.
Sorry, not you, not you. No, I was talking about Robert.
That's cool.
Hey, the offensive line. I don't want to get started on the one guy I like to pick on, but do you think there still needs to be upgrades there, especially at center with Corey? Do you think he's a long term answer or
no?
I don't know.
I think he hasn't played as well this year as anyone would have hoped. I think he's been playing injured for a bit of the year, even before he went out. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. I don't know. I don't know if the future center is even on the roster right now. But you know, given Corey's age, I mean, it's time to start grooming someone to take over at some point soon. It'll be interesting to see once he gets himself healthy if he's able to turn his season around. I mean, obviously on the left tackle, you're set for a number of years. I mean, would it trend to sign for another 5 years, kicking in next year? I mean, he'll be a Redskin for life. He's a perennial Pro Bowler, great leader. You're set there. I thought Sean LaValle was playing his best football before he got hurt. I think some of those running lanes that aren't as wide open as they were in those first couple of weeks, it's a result of losing Sean and you know, turning to Spencer Long, who's, you know, just getting his first taste of the NFL.
Right.
I think the right side, you know, I think it's young, but they're willing to give us time to grow. I mean, you know, Morgan Moses has had ups and downs, but he's coachable, he's smart, he's got the physical pull. I think he's going to get an opportunity with Dunn to be there for a number of years. And Brandon Sheriff, number 5 overall pick, I mean, he's going to be a right guard for a number of years. I would say if there's one position that I would say would be upgraded sooner rather than later, it'll probably be center. But I'm willing to give Corey the final 9 games of this year to see if he's able to turn things around.
Hello?
You guys still there?
Oh, yes. I'm
yep,
sorry.
Yep. Yeah, we're here, Tariq. Thanks.
I'm cutting it out.
Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah, no problem. You still on with us, Tariq?
I'm still here, but I am cutting in and out a little bit.
Do you think you're going to keep the pick 'em crown with Larry Michael? Do you think you're going to beat him this year again?
You know, the first thing I saw Larry today for about, I don't know, 10 seconds, and he just looked at me and held up one finger. So I think my lead is down to 1 game now. So I'm starting to get a little nervous. I'm starting to wonder if I'm just approaching this whole thing wrong. He does absolutely zero preparation. I spend like 45 minutes, you know, looking at the matchup, looking at the numbers, looking at some trends. You know, I get some matchup notes emailed to me every week. I go through those, and I think one of these weeks I'm just gonna show up with no notes and just go off the top of my head and see how it turns out.
You know what? I think that would be fun. And did you pick the Buccaneers this week, or did you pick the Redskins?
I picked the Skins. I picked 20-13. Little did I know it was going to take a 24-point comeback to get the win. But I picked the Skins. I picked the Skins more than recent years. I want to say this year, where you played 7 games. I picked them at 5.
Wow.
And I think they won. And they won the 3 that I said they were, you know, 3 of the 5. So. You know, I'm optimistic. I'm always an optimistic guy, and I don't know. I think when this team is at full strength, you know, they still have some depth issues at certain positions. But I think when they're at full strength, they're a whole lot closer to being a winning ball club than they have been in a number of years. I like some of the guys they brought in the offseason. I think the culture is starting to shift a little bit in that locker room, and I think that it all starts with Scott McLuhan, but I think I see things changing slowly, moving in the right direction.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So you're going to pick us against the Patriots then?
Sorry, you guys are breaking up. I didn't hear that last question.
I said you're going to pick up against the Patriots, right?
Okay, breaking up.
We're breaking up. Very convenient timing.
Oh, man. I don't know. That's going to be a tough one. That's going to be a tough one. I mean, Tom Brady is in full swing on his revenge tour. I know they didn't play too great yesterday, but they still gutted one out, you know. They're pretty much automatic at home. That's going to be tough. I think, you know, when I look at that game, the two things I want to see, I'm really going to focus on Alfred Morris in that game and seeing where exactly these running struggles lie. And I'm also going to be watching Cousins. Like I said at the top of the show, I mean, the one thing he hasn't been able to do is string together strong performances. I don't think it's come down to whether he's able to out-duel Tom Brady. I you know what I want to see? I want to see another triple-digit passer rating. I don't
right.
remember the last time he's put – I don't think he's ever put two of those together in back-to-back starts. I want to see him not throw interceptions for the second time in a row and maybe throw for a touchdown or two. And again, you know, have that passer rating be a 110 or a 120. If he can do that 2 times in a row, that's the difference between a starting quarterback in this league and a backup. I mean, he clearly has the tools – to be on an NFL roster. That's not even in the discussion. The question is, can he be a number one, a number 1A, or a number 2? And right now, he's a tweener. He's got to prove it. He's got to show that he can be counted on every week to not just be adequate or okay or good, to be very good and play at a high level. That's his next challenge.
Can you imagine the video clip you'd get of Cousins if he actually won? You think this last one went viral. That would be amazing.
Yeah, no, that would be nuts. I was, it was funny, we were in the media room today, and We were watching the Vine, the loop numbers were just going up like astronomically, and we were all joking around like, all right, well, who are you going to piss off next week and get to yell at you next week? we haven't quite figured out who it's going to be, but I'm going to have to write something negative about somebody and just go them into saying something when the cameras are on. going viral is funny. It's funny. I've now gone viral 2 times in the span of 3 months. I don't know if you guys remember in Richmond, I was interviewing a coach, I think, and then Swaggy Baker gets behind me and starts doing the peanut butter and jelly dance with his shirt pulled up. You guys remember that?
Yes.
That went crazy. And then this, of course. So when I walked in last night to my house, I had no idea. I'd been in my car for an hour and 10 minutes drive back to Ashburn, and I walk in and my 13-year-old daughter looks at me and she goes, "Hey, Daddy, why did that quarterback yell at you? And look at this Vine, it's 12 million views."
Wow.
I totally did not expect that.
Do you think Deshaun Jackson's going to come back?
Yeah, I think he'll play against the Patriots.
Would you be surprised if he doesn't?
Yes. I'd be surprised if he does. I was talking to some coaches today, and on the sideline yesterday. I think the expectation from just about everyone is that he'll be back for this game. I talked to Deshaun on the field before the Jets game for a few minutes, and he told me, he said even though the Redskins threw it out there that it was the 3 to 4 week injury, it was explained to him early on this was probably a 6 week injury. So I think he thought all along he was going to be out for a little bit longer than they originally said. It was a pretty significant tear in the hamstring, and then he had the setback last week. And I think he had a baby boy today too. A lot going on in this young man's life.
Yeah.
I think he's on track to play November 8th against the Patriots, as long as there's no setback. Because remember, he gets another week off here. Obviously, it's the bye week. So, I think the timing is good. He'll get to spend some time with his newborn, get the hamstring healthy, and come back and play against the Patriots.
Speaking of hamstrings, how about Rashad Breeland? Do you have any information on that one?
It's a little concerning. I didn't talk to him much after the game, but I saw him walking up after the field, off the field, and he had a big ice pack, and it was looking like a lower hamstring strain. Those can be a little trickier than ones that are happen higher up in the leg. He was limping pretty significantly. Listening to what Jay said today, and Jay's usually pretty honest about injuries and how long guys are going to be out. It sounds like this is something that's going to need to be monitored. It's way too early to say if he's a quick healer, too. I think we see that with both of his knee injuries. He comes back a little faster than the average guy. He's got good genes. So I think the hope is that he'll play against the Patriots. I think they're a little concerned, though, that he won't be ready.
Okay, so what about our two other corners, D'Angelo Hall and Chris Culliver? They've been out for a while, so I'm hoping they will be back.
I talked to D. Hall for a little bit before the game yesterday. He said he's doing his best, man. He said he's rehabbing through the bye week with the hope of coming back at some point this season. I'm not sure there's a real time frame on him. I would be surprised to see him against the Patriots, but we'll find out a little more in about a week after they get a quick practice tomorrow morning, and then they're off until the following Monday. And that following Monday and Tuesday, that's when we'll really get a feel for who is going to be back and who's not. Chris Culliver's knee just it's been an inflammation and soreness issue. There's nothing structurally wrong in there, I don't think. The way it was complicated, there's something in there that's clicking, and it's causing some inflammation and some soreness and some discomfort. But they're relatively confident. The team is relatively confident that he can't make it work. I'm not sure the player feels that way, but the team feels like he can't make it work. So, again, I think about a week from now, we'll get a better feel for where he's at.
Oh, well. Well, thank you so much for all the information. I mean,
sure thing.
It's great being able to talk to you.
Sure. Anytime.
Yeah. Yeah, great stuff, Tariq, as always. We're going to wrap this up. But one final question for you. We want you to put your GM hat on. Into phase two with Scott McLuhan, off the top of your head, what would be the next position you'll target going into the offseason?
Okay. If we assume that Kirk Cousins plays well over these final few games here, the second half of the season, and entrenches himself as a starter going forward, I would say I would look at the defensive side of the ball. I'd probably go edge rusher, depending on what goes on with Junior Gallette. You know, Junior Gallette is. He's still controlled by the team, even though it was a one-year deal that they somehow got him to agree to first right of refusal for next year. So he's still under Redskins' control next year. Depending on what happens with him and his recovery from the Achilles injury, his team needs more pass rush. They need more. Ryan Kerrigan is been banged up. I think he can be an elite player, but we haven't seen it yet this year. Trent Murphy, I don't know. I think he's a good player, but I think they need one more outside linebacker who can put up double digits in sacks. They were hoping that guy was going to be Gallette. So I would say with my first round pick next year, that's what I'm looking at. I probably wouldn't go in free agency for that player, especially if Gallette looks like he might be ready. I might be looking to invest a first or second round pick in an edge rusher.
Gotcha. Totally agree on that. Yeah, good stuff. Well, Tariq, as always, it's a pleasure for you joining us.
Sure. No problem.
Hey, man, we most definitely will be reaching out to you again. So, hey, man, be ready for us because we're going to be looking for you.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Sure. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
Well, ladies and gents, that was Tariq Al-Bashir from Comcast Sportsnet. Always a good listen and a good hear. So, guys, we're going to wrap this up. I'm going to do a quick round table, and I'm going to throw the same question that I did to Tariq to you guys. And, Julie, you can start off first up. If you're looking at Scott McLuhan, Phase 2, Washington Redskins, who is your target list?
I don't know about specific players, but I know positions that I'd want to address. And I agree with everything Tariq said, but I would also look at shoring up the offensive line, specifically the center position, left guard.
Yeah, totally agree. I think along with Brandon Sheriff and Ari Quanjo, you want to see some more young guns in there to establish. I think we got a gem with Bill Callahan, and he's really doing some wonders with the O-line, and it'll be great to see some new positions in there to help solidify that O-line for years to come.
And also our secondary. Oh, good.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
I would address the secondary because I don't think D-Haw is going to be here next year. So that leaves Brillin and Colliver, and we need a big corner as well, and I think Duke and Nacho will be coming back, so, and then you have Golston for another year probably.
Right.
So I would get another corner.
Yeah, that's secondary. I know Scott went above and beyond during free agency last year to shore up that secondary. And I know due to injuries and stuff, it's been, you know, kind of difficult for the guys to gel back there and form some type of chemistry. So, Jay, I definitely agree on looking for some defensive help back there in that secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, man, Jason, I know me and you, you know, we watch college ball every weekend, you know, making our side notes. Who do you want to see Scott target next season in phase two of his build-up plan?
Anybody that replaces Larivas be good for me.
How did we know that?
I think maybe one of the a quarterback in the later rounds. I know my boy Hackenberg, he's my personal favorite. He's off, but I think some of it's the system. If you followed him in Penn State with Bill O'Brien, he was lighting the college football up, you know. He's not quite as efficient with James Franklin. His footwork gets sloppy. I think they probably should look into, I wouldn't say a franchise quarterback, but, you know, someone, you know, Colt's not going to be there. And I really don't think the quarterback of our future is on this team. So I think you look at somebody. I don't see a first rounder out there, though.
Right.
So I'm going to say offensive line because we're still weak on the run push. They got better at pass pro, but the run blocking still isn't great.
Agree. Yeah, me personally, I would my number one rule: protect the QB or get to the QB. So some more big boys on the line of scrimmage would be okay in my book. Again, Scott's been doing his thing all year. We're seeing a change in the culture. We're seeing the improvement across the board. And, you know, Redskins fans, they're hungry. They want to keep seeing some consistency there. And I'm sure whatever Scott looks over with the list, looks over the roster, as well as coaches. I know myself over Sunday, maybe solidify and getting some more position coaches in will be a plus in my book as well.
I concur.
All right, so it's been a good pod, guys and gals. We had Robert Henson on. We had Tariq Al-Bashir on. Some good stuff all around. Stay tuned. We are just getting started. We are going to get back with some more guests. We're going to enjoy this bye week with a win. Hello, all the fans out there. You know, enjoy this win. Hopefully the coaches get the players prepared because the Patriots are coming. But we're going to ride this win right into the bye week.
Hail to the Redskins.
Hail to victory. All right. All right, guys and gals, my name is Chris Worthy. You got Julie, Jay, Tara, Jason, from all of us here, the BGA crew. We're going to sign out.
Good night.